It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
From NJ.com and the Star Ledger, welcome to the Rutgers Rant, your one-stop podcast for the Scarlet Knights. With your host, Steve Politi, and Rutgers insiders Keith Sargent and James Cratch. Let's start shopping.
Hello, everybody. Steve Politi from NJ Advance Media. Welcome back to the Rutgers Rant. Sarge and Cratch are here with me as always. Guys, 2-0. Nice trip up to Syracuse with Sarge. A wonderful 3.5-hour drive back because the two of us didn't realize there was an airport in Syracuse. That's okay. We'll know that for next time, if there is a next time. Doubt there'll be a next time. Not much to say about it. You know, it was a classic Greg Schiano win circa, like, what, we want to say 2007. Not a lot of offense. Defense was great. Special teams were great. You know, they had the formula. I think they knew midway through that game, maybe even, you know, earlier than that, it was going to be one of these tight nip and tuck contests. They didn't want the offense to lose it for them. The defense was just good enough. And most importantly, you know, they got what you guys thought was the most challenging win, road win, non-conference win that they needed. Sarge.
Yeah, I think we know what Rutgers is now through 2 weeks. And what they are is a really, really big, Big Ten caliber, very good defense. A very good special team. So again, like we talked about last week, two to three phases, they're really, really solid in. And then the offense, I think there is, you know, Greg called it a work in progress, but I don't even know if it's a work in progress right now. It has a long way to go. We'll talk about some of the issues in a minute, but I think it's a team that Greg is going to do everything he can to disguise, to cover up the warts, you know, on offense and do everything they can. And that's not turn the ball over. That's the main thing. Cause as he talked about time and time again, if you don't turn the ball over, or if you're committing turnovers like they had the first 2 weeks, you're going to give yourself a chance to win in the fourth quarter. That's exactly what happened again. And I think now at this point, we just know what the team is.
Yeah. All right. Let's just dive right into the warts. And, you know, I think I got a lot of emails. It's always an interesting sign with where the fan base is moving expectation wise. A lot of emails that said we're 2-0, but, or despite the two wins, .. And I think people are concerned about the offense. I think they're certainly concerned about Noah Vedral. You know, Cratch, we've talked about it a lot. And if they had a better option at quarterback, they'd be playing him. You know, I look back at the game now, you know, 22 of 28, 145 yards, one touchdown, ran the ball a few times. The biggest thing, as you mentioned, Sarge, zero turnovers. And we're just remiss if we ignore the constant pressure that kid was under in that game. I think about there was one drive when it clearly, you know, the goal was to fake a handoff, drop back, throw a long pass. You know, before he can turn around and see where Bo Melton is, before, you know, Shamin Jones is, he's wrapped up and tackled. I mean, you can't throw downfield if you can't, you know, take a five-step drop, stop, turn, and assess it. Cratch, is that a problem you think is solvable, or is that it? Is this what this team's going to be?
I think there's a very good chance this just is what it is, as Sarge said. I mean, when I look at, you know, obviously I didn't make the trip. I watched the game, the tape. There are two things this offense has to do to kind of get going. They've got to be able to throw the ball down the field, and they've got to have Isaiah Pacheco get on a roll. You can't accomplish either of those things with the offensive line in its current state. I mean, the offensive line is the problem, and we thought it was going to be the problem going into the season and throughout training camp, and here we are. I mean, they're 2-0. Rutgers fans should celebrate that. You know, I mean, look, for everything this program has gone through in recent years, you have to, you know, be happy with that. And your barring a catastrophe, you're going to be 3-0 for the first time in almost a decade. That's great. Do I still think there's a very good chance that Michigan is going to be a rude awakening? Of course. But right now they're 2-0, on the way to 3-0. They're winning games. Do I think it's a terribly sustainable formula? No. And the only way that you're going to kind of improve the formula, in my opinion, is that offensive line has to get better in a hurry. What it seems to me is they have regressed to the point that Sean Gleason's genius can't even mask it, which is a big, big problem.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a great point. Are you surprised it regressed? I mean, you've got most of the guys back on that line. Sarge, I mean, I guess I just thought, you know, we knew from the beginning it was going to be a liability. I just didn't think it would be this big of a liability.
Surprised, just based on, you know, the first thing, you know, going back to Indianapolis when Crash and I were up on like the 22nd floor of a hotel talking to Greg Schiano. First thing he said to us was the offensive line is going to be an issue. That's his biggest concern. He continued that refrain throughout training camp. I'm not surprised, but yeah, Crash is right. I mean, you know, I got so many emails and texts and from people yesterday about, you know, Noah Vedral. We'll get to him in a second, but you know, there were two plays. We had a great view in the press box, and there were two plays back to back where, you know, that clearly they were trying to go deep. That the wide receiver got separation, got past his defender, and Vedral had no chance to throw the ball. As soon as, you know, he just had no chance. And back-to-back plays, and, you know, you can't say that, well, Vedral, you know, can't throw deep when, you know, and look, fans are going to pinpoint the quarterback whenever he gets sacked or whenever, you know, you look at the final total. But I'm telling you guys, it just, you know, he had no chance in that game.
Right. And the idea, and we love to talk about Gavin Wimsatt. It's been a fun story, but you put a kid in that situation against what was a very good Syracuse defensive front, one who's not as smart about protecting the ball. He can't be at that stage of his career. They could have lost that game. It could have gone the other way. I think that's something that's important to remember. We'll talk about him a little bit more as well. You know, Cratch, when you watch that on tape, did you see something that we didn't see off? Was Vedral worse than we're making it out to be? And what were your thoughts when you're watching it?
No, I think it's the offensive line is just not good. You know, they can't, you know, I think the back-to-back, like they can't, you know, they had the long touchdown pass to Haskins, but like, you know, I think the biggest thing that kind of stood out to me, and I went and looked at this, Rutgers has had 9 scoring drives. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. 9 scoring, you know, touchdown drives this season. None of them have been longer than 64 yards, I believe. Wow. Michigan has also had 9 touchdown drives. They've been 87 yards, 79 yards, 80 yards, 75 yards. It's like, that's the issue. Like, I think the scary thing is like, hey, when they're getting takeaways, they can make things happen. We saw it against Temple. We saw it a little bit, you know, in crunch time against Syracuse. But when those takeaways stop happening, look, that might be a function of this team. This might be a team that gets 2-3 a week, which is great. But if they stop getting those short fields, I really wonder, like, can they sustain an 80-yard drive? You know, can the ball get kicked through the back of the end zone on a kickoff, and then they go down the field, you know, 75 yards? The other thing I will mention, too, that kind of struck me was they just, for whatever reason, they're not turning the ball over right now, which is great. But what happens when they inevitably do? It feels like, and especially now that it seems like they're playing so conservatively. And, look, Noah Vedral has been tremendous this season, but he – remember last year against Illinois, he had killer turnovers. So this, you know, no veteran, we've seen him turn the ball over. So what happens when he has a bad game? That's got to be scary for Rutgers.
Yeah, it is a razor thin margin right now. And we say that when they've won one game by 47, one game by 10. But I mean, to that point, I do think the defense is very good, bordering with a chance to be even better than that. And, you know, we were going into this game, we thought that Syracuse was going to run the ball down their throats. That was the fear. I mean, this was a running attack that kind of reminded you, physical, you know, we looked at what happened last year late in the season against Nebraska, and you're like, all right, well, this could be a game where Syracuse is just getting 6-7 gobs of yards a play. Instead, they really shut it down well. The big play they gave up was in the passing game, you know, the one scoring drive. Sarge, what has impressed you the most about the defense on the other side of the ball?
Well, you know, it's the run defense, like you said early on. You know, Syracuse was, you know, pounding a little bit, and they figure it out. And I think talking to some people behind the scenes, I think they were able to kind of mix and match and be able to kind of just you know, do some different wrinkles, and they were able to they rotate a ton of personnel early on. You know, defensive line, they, you know, you saw that they kept on rotating defensive line linemen. So they a lot of credit on that. I don't know if Crash was able to notice that on his film review, but and there were some Syracuse receivers who got separation, and there were opportunities for a good quarterback, for maybe, you know, Cade McNamara, for example, who, you know, who I think is a good quarterback, to exploit in a couple of weeks. Syracuse doesn't have a good quarterback, and I think that could be an issue going forward. Now, Christian Izian had an amazing breakaway, you know, right before the end of the first half, that I think you touched on in your column.
Yeah. He's a very good player. Yeah,
he's very, very good player. But again, you could look back on the film, or you just watch it live. There were some Syracuse wide receivers who got downfield, had separation, good quarterback exploits that. So that's probably something that you need to keep an eye on. But again, overall, the numbers speak for themselves. The defense has been very, very good.
The defense, and of course, the punter. I got to tell you, Kratz, and I know I can't extol the virtues of our friend Adam Korzak to you of all people, Kratz. But I mean, it was pretty remarkable. And then that's two straight weeks that he has taken a punt and pinned the team back so far that it completely changed the momentum of a game. He did it against Temple. They got a safety out of it. That was kind of the end of that game right away. And, you know, in that game, third quarter, Rutgers goes three and out right away to start the second half. He laces the 69-yard line drive to the 1.5-yard line. And that, you know, you could just tell that just completely took the wind out of Syracuse's sails. I asked him about it. And I mean, it's great. Like he's that great golfer that, like, well, you know, I could have put it above the hole on, like, when you hit it 7-iron to 3 feet, you know, he's nitpicking what he did. I'm looking at you like, you literally could not have run down there and placed the name better than you did. But he's a master of his craft, man. I mean, and said he might come back for a fifth year, which is pretty remarkable, Kratz.
It is. So I will, you know, quick little story time. I can't remember what exactly the circumstances were, but 2018, his first year at Rutgers, I wrote something about, like, you know, he is a weapon. Like, Rutgers has to use him as a weapon. And word got back to me that the former head coach kind of scoffed at the idea. He's just a punter. What do you mean weapon? We don't want to punt. That's why you punt. Boy. A punt is an offensive play. And Greg Schiano and his Adam Shire clearly understand that. And it's just, I think, look, after all of the, you know, best pound for pound player on the team, after all the horrible seasons, it's just incredible to see Adam Korsak's ability being harnessed to win
in a good way. Exactly. And a good team. It's incredible.
You know, it's not just like, oh, he had a great game in the 30-0 loss to Iowa. Right, you know, right. It's like it now, you know, I'll be honest with you. I went up. I was like, has a punter ever gotten a Heisman vote? Because, like, you know, wow. you laugh.
Start the campaign. Do it.
I mean, if I were Rutgers, I would start a campaign just
Why
to
not?
Have fun.
It's funny, of course.
You know, yeah. But that being said, I mean, we all vote for the Heisman. I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know, the Heisman is supposed to go to the, you know, the most outstanding college football player in America. Adam Korsak, for what he does, has got to be pretty close. He's the best punter in America. I don't care if some guy in the SEC has got bigger number. I mean, he is the best punter in America. We've seen him for 4 years now. So, yeah, it's just incredible. He is a guy who, you know, I know you were kind of tongue-in-cheek, but, yeah, he could punt them to a bowl game because they have a formula that they've proven works. Now, I'm skeptical it's going to work four more times, especially as we get into Big Ten play, but – if he keeps pinning people back there and they stay healthy, which I think, you know, one thing I forgot to mention, this team's basically at peak health right now. So what happens when inevitably one or two guys go down? That also has to be a concern for them. But that aside, Adam Korsak is brilliant, and it would not shock me if whether he gets the extra year or not next season. And I don't think anyone really knows it's the NCAA. You can't really ever predict what they're going to do. Wouldn't shock me if he goes to the NFL and revolutionizes the NFL punting game, because I know that usually rugby punting is not a thing in the NFL, but I mean, come on, look at this guy. Like, there's got to be someone who can make it work.
I'm envisioning now if the former head coach giving a press conference answer on Adam. Adam, you know, he's a punter. He's a good – he kicks the ball, shows up, goes to practice. Is he a weapon? No, not a weapon. Sorry.
I just want to know, Cratch is booked for Orlando for the College Football Home Depot, you know, College Football Award show.
Great guy award.
The great guy.
I mean – like, man. All kidding aside, Adam Korsak is probably going to leave here with all the punting records. I think, you know,
So Rutgers has had great punters since 2000.
Yeah, Ryan Anderson, who else?
You know, Barr, like, I mean, they've had, you know, Joe Radigan.
Radigan, yeah.
You know, they've had, you know, their first, you know, all Big Ten, you know, performer was a punter, you know, a couple years ago. So they've had really good punters. And, you know, this kid is, you know, going to be, without question, the best in school history.
He is no doubt Rutgers Hall of Famer. Like, if you look at all the guys on the roster.
Wow, Hall of Famer.
We've got to move off the punter or they're going to cancel the show. I don't think there's ever been a podcast in the history of the internet that's been canceled, but I can see it. They're going to, all right, too much on the punter, you guys. It's the rant's over. Yes, but I agree. Hall of Famer, whatever place you want to put our punter, Adam Korsak, he belongs there. All right, let's jump into true or false, guys. Got a lot of topics this week. You know how it works. True or false, Gavin Wimsatt will play against Delaware. Cratch, true or false?
False.
Sarge?
True.
True. Nice. All right. Good. So here's the next one on that line. True or false, Gavin Wimsatt should play against Delaware. Cratch, do you want to see him? Should we see him?
Of course I want to see him. True.
True. Sarge?
Those are two questions, Belitti. Try to stick.
Should he play against Delaware? That's the question.
True.
He should. Again, behind that offensive line, he should play. All right, we'll come back and talk about that. True or false, Rutgers is afraid to let Noah Vedral throw the ball long. Cratch, true or false?
I'll say true.
Sarge?
I'll say false.
I'm saying false too because they designed the second half, and
they designed a couple plays that just didn't work. So.
True or false, Kyle Manungai should be the featured running back on this team. Cratch.
False.
Sarge?
False, but can we get back to it?
Yeah, we'll get back to it. Yeah, I'm going to say true, so we'll definitely get back to it. True or false, where's the separation? Rutgers has a wide receiver issue again. Cratch, true or false?
False, for now.
Sarge?
False.
I'm going to go false as well, although we really don't know. True or false, coaching can solve the Rutgers blocking problem. Cratch, can coaching save this?
I'm going to say false.
Sarge?
False.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think it's false as well. True or false, Rutgers never has to worry about Syracuse or Temple as a recruiting rival again. Cratch, true or false?
False.
Sarge?
True. Were you in a Carrier Dome? Was anyone in a Carrier Dome?
I'm going to say false, too, because their best recruiter might be the Temple head coach soon. All right. True or false, Iowa is the Big Ten's best shot at the college football playoff. Cratch, true or false?
I will say false.
Sarge?
False.
I think it has to be true because I don't think Ohio State's getting there with one loss. I mean, and finally, true or false, if you ever want to hide an embarrassing video, the best place to do it is on the ACC Network's Overflow channel. Cratch, true or false?
True.
Sarge?
True.
I mean, the emails we got from people about that, I mean, like, I can't, I wanted to say, like, I answered a few of them. I just can't solve this for you. I'm sorry. I just don't know where the game is. I don't know what to tell you. ACC Network X. I guess they made look like Matt Millen and the Big Ten Network from the old days look like you know, the peak Howard Cosell Monday Night Football commentator.
It's almost like me back a couple of years ago when Rutgers had that credit card fraud scandal, and I'm learning about the dark web for the first time. I had no idea. My wife and everyone who I know are making fun of me that I had no idea. It would be like me trying to find the dark web, the Rutgers fans trying to find ACC Network, and the amount of emails and the texts. And I felt so bad. I mean, I just, you know, it was 2 weeks in a row. They've had issues with finding the game. And, you know, if you're a fan that is relying on TV, which a lot of them are, you know, I feel bad for you.
Yeah, it's rough. It really is rough. All right. So why do you guys think they should stick with Pacheco?
He's the most talented back they have. We've seen him, you know, flash, look like a Big Ten player. We've seen it happen. I just think, you know, and look, I'm not saying the leash should be, you know, as long as you can imagine. I mean, at some point you got to go with the hot hand, but it's just, they have to get him north, south. I mean, I still see, and I get it. I don't understand every week. I'm like, why is this still happening? You know, he's six yards deep in the backfield, and then we're handing him the ball and he's running sideways. Like, I just don't get why they keep doing that. If he's doing that on his own, they've got to get him out, because Monagai goes north south. Like, he gets his shoulders upfield and he goes. But I think at this point, Pacheco, just when he gets going, you can't stop him defensively. We've seen that. That's why I think you have to stick with him.
Yeah, so Monagai, I think he has some Ray Rice in him. I'm not comparing to Ray Rice, but you know, that size. And I know Greg Schiano's always liked those smallish running backs to, you know, get rolling behind a big offensive line, which they have some tall guys on the offensive line, because the defense doesn't see him, and then all of a sudden he's 2 or 3 yards up the field and gets another burst. Especially with their blocking scheme, the zone blocking scheme that they tend to employ. You know, Monagai might be a better fit down the line. I still think Pacheco's a more talented player. So that's the reason why I said false, and I would not give up on Pacheco yet.
Yeah, you don't give up on him, but I will say, you know, you want to get more carries for Monagai. I just think he looks like he could be special. And the offense where it is now, he's got to start trying new things. We talked about the coaching can't solve the problem. I will say this, though. You know, there are some short passes that clearly are working. I know fans get frustrated. I made a joke, like, they have a wide array of 4-yard passes, and they do. But the wide receiver screens seem to work a little bit for Bo Melton. They say, you know, they at least they're getting 5-6 yards on first down. So there are some things they can do. You know, we'll talk about any insider questions. A lot of insiders want to know why there are more tight ends involved in that. Cratch, what do you think? Is there something scheme-wise, even if you can't improve the blocking up front, can you scheme around it a little bit?
I think you have to. I go back to the touchdown so I can stemple. I do think a lot of their offense is going to be quick pass to Bo, get him in space, let him run. Him and Crookshank. I think that's going to have to a 5-yard pass that Bo then takes 50 yards. Like, that's going to have to be a big part of their offense. But no, I mean, like, look, as I said, like, this offensive line is what it is. I mean, it's understandable. It was a mess when Greg Schiano got here. You know, it's very difficult to, you know, getting a good offensive lineman out of the transfer portal is like signing a good offensive lineman in NFL free agency. There's only like 3 of them, and they're going where the most money is, or in the NFL, like, you know, if you're the best offensive lineman in the portal, you're going to Alabama. You're going to Ohio State. You're going to Clemson. You're not going to Rutgers. So you can't do that. You got to develop these guys. It can take, you know, I remember talking with A.J. Blazek, and he said, you know, when he was at Iowa, like, offensive linemen at Iowa didn't play until it was like year 3 or year 4. Like, that was just the way it worked. Like, it takes a while to develop the guys. So this is what they've got. And as I said, last year they were able to figure it out. But so far, I mean,
there's a reason Greg Schiano has recruited about 10 of them in this upcoming class. I mean, it's pretty.
Yeah. But even those guys are going to get here, they might not be ready until like 2024.
Yep.
So it's, you know, they're going to have to figure something out.
All right. Insider questions, as always. Thank you. We asked our people subscribing to our tech service for questions each week for the podcast. Got a lot of good ones, as always. I appreciate it. Thank you for participating in the show and for subscribing. This is a great one. I want to start here. CJ and Basking Ridge wants us to name the 3 dumpiest college football venues you've covered a game in. pretty timely, Sarge, considering where we just came from. So we're driving up, just a little quick story about going to the carriage door. We're driving up and I'm doing a radio interview, and the guy in ESPN, New York, ESPN, I don't know, Utica or whatever it was telling me about it. Oh, they really improved the carriage dome. You're going to wait till you see it. Big new scoreboard. You know, they fixed the roof. You no longer has that suction noise when you walk into it. I'm like, oh, that's good to know. Cause last time I was there, it was a, you know what? It was just an absolute dump. So we get there. I'm looking around. Hey, there's a new scoreboard. I guess, you know, there's new lights. It looks better. Have to go to the bathroom. Walk into the bathroom. And you're still urinating in a trough. What is this? I mean, we had to, you can't give me a urinal? You got to give me a trough? Syracuse? I mean, what? It's like this is Deadwood 1869 here? Come on.
A little TMI, I'll be honest.
Is it TMI? I don't think it's TMI because a lot of fans, I'm sure there are Rutgers fans who were at that game who thought the exact same thing. Like, what's a trough? My goodness.
Nothing will ever beat Legion Field over in Birmingham for the
yes, that's right.
I know there's history involved, folks. I know I'm going to get some angry emails from Alabama. I get it. But, you know, all I know is – you know, when I arrived, I'm not going to throw the coach under the bus. So I'll just say, you know, Rutgers official. You know, there was a Rutgers coach when I arrived. I was walking in with the coach. It's his first impression of it, and you know, this was a coach who had seen a lot of football fields in his life, and just was horrified. He was like, "What the bleep is this?" And it was bad. It was bad. Nothing will ever top that. Carrier Dome. Yeah, you know, is just not good. And that's the reason why I said, you know, that I don't think Rutgers, you know, should worry about Temple for sure. And same thing with Syracuse. I think, you know, Rutgers is in Big Ten. Big Ten is going to be better than ACC for a long, long time. Rutgers has better facilities. You know, we couldn't say that back in, or, you know, the early part of Craig's first tenure. Now they have better facilities than Syracuse. Syracuse should not be a recruiting rival.
Cratch, you must have a facility. You must have a stadium you covered a game in that's not good.
So I mean, the worst stadium it's not a college stadium, FedEx Field or whatever.
Oh, geez.
Whatever the Washington football team. I think it's still FedEx Field. It's just an abomination.
Thanks for reminding me. I'm going there Thursday. Thank you. Appreciate
it. It is the worst stadium in America by far. College wise, you know, I'm not saying this because where it's like Clemson Memorial Stadium in Clemson is a dump. Neyland Stadium, Tennessee, is the ugliest stadium I've ever been to. I mean, it is just hideous from the outside. Vanderbilt Stadium, kind of dumpy. Real funny, quick, two funny things about my trip to Vanderbilt. So we go there, and there was like this big church that like was selling out, you know, $10 to have tailgate parking. And I guess the minister of the church didn't realize that people drank alcohol at tailgates in the South. So he's like running around car to car, basically trying to dump people's booze out. And they weren't really having it. And then we go to the game, very sleepy environment. Like there's like the lights are out in the press box. So it was like you fall asleep. And I start to smell smoke. Like some, I guess the kitchen crew that was like working the press food, like once they closed the shop, they just started smoking cigarettes in the press box. So that was interesting.
Yeah, outstanding.
The nicest surprise stadium I ever went to, Mississippi State, has a beautiful stadium.
Oh, I believe that.
No place
of course.
You think would be a dump.
Yeah. All right. That was a good question. Thanks, CJ. I got two good questions from Diane. Wanted to know one. Why does Rutgers continue to use the shotgun instead of taking a snap under center in a 4th-and-1 situation? I wondered the same thing. Fooch, our good friend from the TV network, this is one of the things that he brings up a lot too. And the second part is another great observation. In both games, I've seen multiple times a quarterback take a snap and fake a play action handoff to someone that was not there in the backfield. I noticed this during the game. Is this confusion? What's going on with that? Cratch, go ahead. Feel those for Diane.
Diane is 1,000% right about under center. It boggles my mind that teams want to go 7 yards to get one. With all the analytics that you know go into this thing, they still haven't figured that out yet. Doesn't make and it boggles my mind at the college level. When you see it at the high school level, when, you know, when you see these high school, it's like, you know, coach, like, you're trying to run an offense that a college runs on Saturday, but their worst player on the team is better than your best player who's ever been to your school. So why are you doing this? And then for the other one, I mean, I think that's just confusion. You know, you got a lot of emotions going on. It's early in the season still. Believe me, I don't think there's any specific, you know, subterfuge about Noah Vedral faking a handoff to a ghost.
All right, great questions, Diane. Alex from Marlboro wants to know, poor quarterback play from Syracuse saved an exposed Rutgers secondary. That's a good point. It really did. Will Avery Young go back to corner? How hurt is Patrick Rene? And also, why has Tyshawn Fogg disappeared? Sarge, you want to field this one? I mean, we noticed that with, obviously, we talked about the great play Izian made to stop that. Otherwise, I didn't think the cornerbacks were terrible, but it, not a lot of opportunities, really. What's your overall thought about the secondary right now?
Well, Max Melton's playing at a really high level.
Yes, absolutely. He's the number one cornerback.
And Cass Abraham's playing at a really high level. He's playing at a good level. Patrice Rene, we don't know. You know, he obviously did not dress for the first two games. You know, Graciano has been more coy than he's ever been about injuries. So we just don't know the long-term status on Patrice Rene. I wish I had the answer for that. And then the third part of the question, Politi.
Hey, Sean Fogg.
Oh, so Fogg's been splitting it with Tyreek Maddox-Williams. Maddox-Williams is the faster guy. He's going to be playing in those third down sub packages, and they play a lot of third down sub packages. So that's basically the reason why Fogg's numbers are going to be, Fogg's going to be in there on running situations on early downs, and Maddox Williams is the faster. So those two are basically splitting it at this point.
It's hard to know since 03 makes every tackle and every running play anyway. So, all right, great questions, Alex. We've got one from this came up last week. Let's ask it again. Would you modify your preseason prediction based on what you saw through 2 weeks? And it's funny for both Rutgers and the rest of the Big Ten. The court wants to know. I was thinking about this. What I saw from Rutgers makes me think, with only a couple exceptions, the defense will give them a chance to win, I don't know, 8 of the last 10 games. I mean, they'll be in these games. I'm not saying they're going to win them, but they will be in them, which means if you have a chance in the fourth quarter, you know, you've got a chance to win. The offense on the other side, you know, makes you think that they could struggle in games. I would not at this point. I said 5-7. I think they're going to win. I still think they're going to win a game that you didn't expect them to win and lose a game you didn't expect them to win. So I'm going to stick with 5-7. Are either one of you changing your predictions?
I would say I think 5-7 is more realistic than I thought a couple of weeks ago. But I think it's hard to make a wholesale change. I'm not ready to go to 6 yet. Because one, I just don't know how much longer. And I don't know how they can continue to win this way. It's a very difficult kind of formula to replicate week in, week out. But, you know, I think Illinois and Northwestern aren't as good as maybe I thought they were going to be. But I also think Michigan State's better than we thought it was going to be. So it's kind of ebb and flow. I think we'll have a much better idea once they get past the Michigan State games midseason. I think that's when we'll really know what direction this team is going. Because we got the Delaware game. I don't think we're going to learn a whole lot from Delaware. I don't think we're going to necessarily learn a whole lot from Michigan and Ohio State. But homecoming Michigan State, I think, is the real acid test for where this team is going in a couple of weeks.
Sarge?
Yeah, I changed it last week, and I'm going to stick by it. I think they have 6 wins in them. You know, I think they're going to be 3-0 non-conference play. And then, Kratz mentioned it, Northwestern and Illinois, and then Maryland. Yeah, Maryland, you know, at the end of the year, I think that, you know, home, I think, you know, there's win number 6.
Wow. It's okay. And here we go to the Fort Worth Bowl, everyone. Good one. Another question. How do you think Rutgers will make sure not to overlook Delaware? And will they get back to votes, get more votes in the AP poll if they do go 3-0 and go to Michigan at that record? Kratz, you're more of a poll observer than me. Do they get votes at 3-0?
I don't think so, but it wouldn't shock me. Just because I don't – the coaches' poll is giving them votes. AP is not.
Greg Schiano is a member of the coaches' poll.
I think we know where the votes are coming. I don't want to expose any mysteries.
Some insider baseball. I'm not saying it's Greg who's voting for Rutgers.
I'll climb on that ledge.
Only USA Today coaches' poll that was ever publicly – available was the last one. And he hated when I would report it because it was public information. I worked for a cadet paper at the time. He hated it. And he would always, if Rutgers was, you know, he would give him like 21, 20, 19. And I guess he would just say, look, I have confidence in my team. And, you know, but the coaches poll, and it's not just Rutgers, it's not just Graciano, but, you know, the coaches just are so, like, they will vote for their teams left and right. So I don't think there's a ton of mystery there.
The coaches poll, like, I understand if you're good at it. I mean, no one cares about the coaches poll. Like, one, it's not the coaches poll. It's the chief of staff and, you know, communications official poll.
That's true.
You know, two, I'm pretty sure that Steve Spurrier, every year in the preseason coaches poll, he would vote Duke 10 just because, like, of his affinity for starting
his career. No, this is true. He did. Like, one year, Duke was – I was covering Duke. They were 0-11 the year before. The next year, they had a vote in the coaches poll.
Yeah.
And I called Steve Spurrier, the Florida coach. It's like, called the switchboard, somehow got through to him, and I asked him, Coach, are you voting for Duke? Oh, yeah, heck, I got a soft spot in my heart, the Blue Devils. I'm like, but they were 0-11 last year, Coach. Yeah, but, you know, that was last year.
Yeah, exactly, you know, it's like, you know, so, yeah, it's a thing, you know. Anyway, they could get a vote. I don't see Delaware moving the needle. As for how you protect against Delaware, you flip on the tape of the Florida State game. Florida State, Jacksonville State, or, you know, better yet, and this might upset some people at the Hale Center, you tell them a little bit about New Hampshire.
Oh boy, do we want to go into that, Sarge? I mean, is that, do you think he's going to bring that up? I don't know if he wants to bring, he might have buried that deep in his subconscious.
You know, he does, you know, use stuff like motivational attack. It'll be interesting. I'm going to ask them today at the press conference. By the time this goes on air, by the time a lot of people listen to this, it might be after. But
you're going to ruin his day at the press conference. Is what you're
saying. I'll probably right away pee in the Cheerios.
Yeah. Hey, you're 2-0, Coach. What about that New Hampshire loss in 2004? Let's talk about that. I don't think they'll get votes. But they, you know, at that point, they don't need to get votes. You know, they'll have an opportunity against Michigan if they play well to change that in a hurry. So we'll come back and pick that game in a minute. I'm trying to see if there's any other good questions we have here. Here's one, Cratch, for you. A couple weeks into the season, who looks like the best team in the Big Ten? Is it Penn State, Iowa, Michigan State?
It's Iowa by far.
By far? You don't
it's
think
Iowa
Penn State,
by far.
Think Penn State's by real? For real?
I mean, I think it depends on how good Wisconsin is. I still think Ohio State has the best chance to get to the playoff in the Big Ten simply because they're not going to play Wisconsin in the regular season. They're not going to play Iowa. For them, I mean, they should be able to win almost all. For them, it's really beat Penn State and beat Michigan. You're in the title game. And I think that the loss to Oregon, as long as Oregon doesn't, you know, lose three games from here, as long as Ohio State wins the Big Ten title, I think they would get in with one loss. I think that helps them. Actually, but I look at, you know, Iowa. Go ahead.
When was the last time the Big Ten West team beat Ohio State or even Penn State when they were in a big spot? When was the last time?
It might be Bielema's last, like, and I think
that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know how, again, you know, Iowa is 2-0 and they're ahead of Ohio State. I just, you know, I know every year is different, but when was the last time a Big Ten West division team beat Ohio State or Penn State in a big spot?
This might not be that Ohio State team, though. This team does not look good.
I do think they have some issues at quarterback. I think that quarterback does not give me the wow factor that, you know, quarterbacks in the last couple of years have.
I think Wisconsin has a chance, better chance than you think, because if they beat Notre Dame and then run the table and win the West, beat Iowa, you know, it's going to be hard. And Iowa, like, look, I mean, part of me thinks Iowa has some crazy loss that you really can't explain every year. That being said, Iowa started last year 0-2. They looked like the best team in the Big Ten West potentially by the end of the year. Now they're cruising, although I think Indiana and Iowa State were highly overrated coming into the season. But, yeah, I still think it's Ohio State just because they have a more manageable regular season schedule. And if Ohio State has one loss and they win the Big Ten title, they're probably getting in.
All right, everyone. Thanks for the questions. Great job. As always, we appreciate your feedback. And of course, for subscribing, having a fun time this season, chatting with you all on the text service. All right, Delaware preview, guys. I was thinking about this. You know, there must have been a moment where Greg Schiano settling into his office. He's happy to be back. He's familiar circumstances, you know, feels good about being home when he just stumbles upon the 2021 schedule and says, "Who the hell scheduled Delaware?" And, you know, this is exactly the team, type of team he does not want to play. A good football championship FCS team, you know. Delaware hasn't looked that impressive, but, you know, we know from history, this is is the obvious game you look past. New Hampshire, we mentioned Villanova, they lost too early in Greg Schiano's tenure. What do you think about this one, Crash? What can you tell me about Delaware, and do you think it's as big a trap as I think it is?
I don't think it is. I was thinking it's like the fact of college football scheduling so far out, like it's like, so Chris Ash comes in and they have to spend money to get out of the Miami game that Schiano scheduled and the UCLA series and everything. But then Chris Ash gets to leave behind this gift basket of you get to play Delaware, which is, you know, FCS semifinalist. And then somewhere down the road, even worse, you're going to let Monmouth show up in Piscataway with their hair on fire, the most fired up team ever coming up from the shore for this moment. So it just, you know, this circle of life with scheduling. Maybe we should stop scheduling games 20 years in advance. They run the ball well. I mean, you know, they've been – I mean, I don't – I think they won by, like, 10 against St. Francis. Maine, you know, which is up and down. I don't think it's the trap game that everyone thinks it is. This is a school that, you know, they lost 17-14 at Pitt in 2019. But other than that, they haven't been terribly competitive against ACC opponents. They're not like North Dakota State playing a FBS team, Power 5 team, like every year. You know, every year, they don't necessarily dabble a lot in these types of games. I think Rutgers has a physical advantage. They should be able to win this game comfortably. I don't think it's going to be 65-0. This is not a MEAC team or a SWAC team, but I do not see this being the trap game everyone thinks it is.
All right, so let's do predictions. We don't have a line. I'm going to set it myself on like 21. What do you think? Is that a good line?
21? That sounds good to me.
All right, so we'll see if that's wrong. Let's see if Vegas is more generous than I am. Sarge, you go first. Pick the game.
Yeah, I've been conservative with Rutgers. I think they're going to explode. This is going to be where they explode. And again, we didn't go back to it, but I think Wimsatt does have a package for him. I mean, I just think that based on everything that we've seen and reading the tea leaves with Graciano, it's not poured any cold water on the idea. This is the type of game where you play him just to get him a little bit of experience. If you're going to play him this season, you would hope to play him in the game against the 1AA. So mm-hmm. I think there will be a package for him. I have no inside information. We haven't seen it in practice. So no one can say, well, you know, I have no inside information. It's just me speculating here. I think that there will be a package for him. I think your Rutgers is going to win big again. I think the offensive line is going to need to get some confidence and have a dominant performance. But I say, you know, 38-7.
Wow. Okay. Cratch?
I will say like 31-7 or something like that. I guess that's only a touchdown off from what Sartre said. I mean, I think this is a test where this is a big – I think moment for Sean Gleason, in that we've talked all about how he's, you know, able to kind of make his system fit the personnel he has. They might have to kind of retool this offense a little bit on the fly and find some new things that are going to work given what they have. So I think this is an opportunity then potentially experiment a little bit, try some different things out. I will say, you know, actually I don't even want to give him 31 because I don't think this team can, you know, unless they get a wave of takeaways, I don't think they can score 31. I will say 28-7. So okay. Your line is right on the nose.
All right. I'm the one who's 2-0 against the spread this year. So I'd say this with absolute certainty, whatever the line is, I'm taking the points. I just don't like this game. I get crazy things happen when you bring one of these opponents in. I think it'll be hard to get up for it with Michigan looming. You know, I see it being I think Rutgers is going to win the game, but I think it's going to be a much closer game than neither one of you think. So I'm going to go something to the effect of 35-28. kind of game. So we'll see if he's right when we come back next week. So let's talk about Wimsatt really quick, though. You know, Sarge, you think he's going to play? Kratz, you don't think he's going to play. Why don't you think he's going to play?
It just seems very quick to me, you know, and I also feel like we know that Greg Schiano loves the gamesmanship and the vague, you know, never wants to give up proprietary information. It just feels like if you're going to try to, like, throw the Wimsatt curveball at someone, I don't, you know, why would you do it against Delaware? You know,
and get an experience.
Yeah, because you can't do it against.
That's a very valid point.
You can do it against Illinois. Where are you going to do that?
So that's that, but I was going to say, like, that's where I have to contradict myself, you know, provide a counter argument. If you don't play him against Delaware, right, you can't throw him out there in the big house, you know, or you don't want to play against Ohio State. So then we're getting, you know, we're now a couple weeks down the road. It's like you're going to play him against Michigan. You know, maybe Michigan State is the spot because, you know, his family was planning to go house hunting that weekend. Anyway, that's when he was supposed to be here, Michigan State game. So I think that's – it just seems really quick to play him against Delaware. Wouldn't shock me if he plays. I think it would be kind of, you know, it's amazing how people have just kind of moved into these camps of there's no way he's going to play and he's definitely going to play. But, yeah, it just seems a little quick for me. I've always thought that maybe mid-October would be where you could realistically get him on a field. But, hey, if he plays against Delaware, I mean, it's going to be a heck of a show.
We had this moment in the Carrier Dome, Kratz, where you know, we get there early and he's out there and he's playing catch with Vedrill. And, I mean, Sarge and I are basically like, you know, hunched over on our seats, kind of watching his. And I say, like I said to him, like, wow, kid's really got a good arm. And I thought about it, like, well, of course he's got a good arm. I mean, that's like, he could play and catch. If he doesn't have a good arm, he wouldn't be, you know, recruited as a quarterback. Yeah. So the breathless update of me watching him play catch was something else. And Sarge, you took video of it too. You were even more into it than I
did. I was. Two things about, and I'm not saying Kratz is wrong. Kratz might end up being right, but how hard is it? Are we overrating a little bit? You know, if you're just going to do a specific package, you know, a Johnny Langan specific package and make the terminology as simple as possible, how hard is it to get? He's in shape. I mean, you know, he arrived in shape, you know, so how hard is it for him to give him a package of like seven plays and, you know, and just he's not going to start against Delaware. I get that. But, you know, at some point, you know, late in the second quarter, you know, could you see him for a package for a series? I think we might.
Yeah, that I totally agree. If not now, then when. All right, what else do we got, guys? Well, as soon as we hyped up women's soccer for the national natty, they lost two games, I see. Anything else going on campus, Crest, that we need to talk about?
First ever volleyball games at the rack.
Whoa.
I believe they had a solid weekend, so that's, you know, big news. I mean, you know, that's a kind of a quick ascent for a program. I mean, I coming into the summer, I didn't think they could physically put a volleyball court at the rack. I was under the impression they had to, like, literally drill holes into the basketball court that would ruin it to put a, you know, net in. But I guess they basically trucked the floor over from College Avenue Gym and threw it on the rack. I don't know all the details, but they're playing in the rack, and that's a big step for that program, I think, because it's going to allow BTN to put them on TV as they did this past weekend. And I think it's much better. It's a lot easier to recruit when you can sell a nice arena or, you know, a respected or a cherished arena. I won't go as far as say the rack is nice than, you know, the barn.
All right. Field hockey also lost, men's soccer. So, you know, it wasn't a good start. Every team stumbles eventually along the way. So not a surprise there. All right, guys, that's it. Appreciate everyone for listening and for participating. We'll be back after the Delaware game. Talk about that in the preview Michigan. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Rutgers Rant. To participate in the conversation and receive live updates about the Scarlet Knights directly to your phone, sign up at nj.com/insider.